Thanks for listening to Olathe Wesleyan Church's online teaching. This week, Pastor Daniel continues our series, Paul's Letter to the Romans.
Good morning. How are y'all doing today? Awesome. Take your Bibles and turn with me to Romans chapter 2. This is the third week in our message series in the book of Romans. But as we are getting ready and you're turning to Romans chapter 2, I want to brag on you guys for a second. This past Friday, we had a trunk or treat event at Ridge Elementary School. And it is a look at you back there giving the touchdown sign. Thank you, Richard. You could tell he was there. It was just a phenomenal event. And I want to tell you, Kim Thorpe, who's the principal there, who we've been building a relationship with that school for 6 years. I remember the first time a group of us went there and talked to Kim and said, hey, we want to serve y'all. She was like, yeah, right. And 6 years later, we can do anything we want at this school. It is an amazing thing. It's because of you guys. On Friday night, there were over 25 cars there, or robotics things, or kettle corn cookers, or popcorn cookers. We had cars that were as simple as mine. I went with what I call the minimalist approach to trunk or treat, which was just candy in a trunk, all the way to the Truetts, who had the car that won as the best car that night. And we forgot to tell anybody, so you get a great prize this morning. You guys get a second trip to the donut thing this morning. And that is a valuable prize. So I think there's three left, and there's three of you, so just hog out. Over 400 people were there Friday night. And Kim asked me to express to you her heartfelt thanks. They could not do that. They could not do soccer club. They could not do a spring egg hunt. They could not do a Christmas celebration for their teachers, that we just go all out and just serve them. They could not do the mentoring that we do and the why care that we do. You guys rock. So thank you from the bottom of my heart, from me, from Kim, from Jim, from Janetta, and from Ken. You guys, you just rock. And I was so proud of you guys Friday night. You were nice, you were sweet, and you brought a ton of candy. The school collected over 280 pounds of candy. And it was like a bunch of locusts going through a cornfield. When it was over, there were empty wrappers everywhere. And there were a lot of empty wrappers on my car. I don't know why. But there were empty wrappers everywhere, and the candy was gone. So thank you for serving on Friday night, and I'm keep up the good work. As I said, we are in week 3 of our message series in the book of Romans. A couple of weeks ago, Ken started us off. And I just want to review for a second what he said. From week 1, he kind of told us the heart of the Apostle Paul, who wrote this letter to the church at Rome. And the main thing from that week is that Paul is a slave to Jesus Christ, who has been called to preach good news, the message of salvation, to Gentiles, to us. Gentiles, which we're going to talk a little bit about in a few minutes, made up a big part of the church at Rome. And Paul had been commissioned to go and share this good news about Jesus Christ. He was a slave to God. Then last week we came and we talked about a passage that told us that we could either be a slave to God, like the Apostle Paul was, or we could be a slave to anything else. And Paul, in very stark and in very specific terms, gave a word of caution to us. He said, if you are a slave to anything else besides God, you will suffer. Now, that sounds so, when I hear that, it just sounds, it's a dire warning. Paul wanted you to know that if you were enslaved to anything other than God, anything other than Jesus, your life is going to be empty. You are going to struggle, and you're going to suffer. I was thinking, as we were preparing for last week, all the things in my life that from one time or another I have allowed to become too prominent in my life that took away, detracted from my relationship with Jesus. Most of you know, I've told you this before, that my goal in life as a kid was to be J.R. Ewing from Dallas. I wanted to be rich. I didn't know how I was going to do that as a chef, but I wanted to be rich and wanted to be powerful and wanted to wear one of those big hats. That became an idol for me, and that's what I wanted to do. That quickly changed when I joined the chili cooking contest here, but you know, that's just one of those things. Well, today we are going to be looking at Romans chapter 2, verses 1 through 16. And Paul does something that I love. He's talked about what it means to be a slave to God. He's talked about what it means to be a slave to anything else. And today, he looks at the church at Rome, and he gives them a caution. And he tells them something that they, as followers of Jesus, need to hear. Now, I want to remind you of this. The Apostle Paul writes this letter to a church meeting in the city of Rome, which is the capital of the Roman Empire. This church is probably growing. It is reaching new people. It is reaching Jews who have moved to Rome for one reason or another. And it is also starting to reach people who were not Jews, people who were Gentiles. But this letter, and especially this section, has as its audience Christ followers, Christians like you and me. Now listen to me. You need to get this. What he said to Rome 2,000 years ago is also applicable to us at Olathe Wesleyan Church in the year 2016. What he talks about today to the church is critical that we get it. So I'm going to start reading. This is verse 1 of Romans chapter 2. He says, "You may think that you can condemn such people, but you are just as bad, and you have no excuse. When you say they are wicked and they should be punished, you are condemning yourself, for you who judge others do the very same thing." Now, immediately when I read that verse, I said, well, what in the world did Paul say last week? And, you know, I preached last week, so I remember, but for those of you who did not ruminate on everything I said last week, let me remind you. In Romans chapter 1, verse 29, the Apostle Paul listed a group of issues that people who are slaves to anything other than God will suffer with. He said they will suffer if they make anything else besides Jesus Christ their God. They will suffer with wickedness, sin, greed, hate, envy, murder, quarreling, deception, malicious behavior, gossip, backstabbing, haters of God, insolent, proud, boastful. They disobey their parents. That really hit home to me. They break their promises. They are heartless and they have no mercy. That is a mouthful. Now, God, through Paul, said last week, if anything else in your life is your God, you're going to suffer with these things. And then in the next breath, Paul says, church, you suffer with those things too. You struggle with those things also. Therefore, you and I should not do something that I have a tendency to want to do constantly. And that is to judge others. Guys, listen, I need to be really frank with you. I'd be a great judge. Now, nobody's ever going to elect me the judge. If any community ever elected me as their judge, move. Because that organization, that community, that city, that village has gone to the bottom of a barrel. But we, what? Did I hear something from that side of the worship center? But I am an expert at judging others' motives, judging their behavior, and judging what they do. That is not what God has called the church to do. This can't be any more clear. He is saying, guys, you do the very same thing that you're condemning other people for, and if you do that, bad things are going to happen. He says, you have to be careful when you point at others. I'm almost ashamed to it. When you point at others, I don't want you to think I was pointing at you, Emily. When you point at others and say, you do this, the majority of the time, I do the same thing. There's this little saying I learned back when I was at Mama Rump's play school in Macon, Georgia. Mama Rump told us, now don't ask me why her name was Mama Rump. She was a large woman. Mama Rump said, people who live in glass houses should not throw rocks. And at the time, I didn't get it. I got rocks. You're standing there. I'm going to nail you. We shouldn't judge people. That's hard for me to hear. I have a part-time job where I go every day and I get on a bus. It's different. I never thought I'd be doing that. And I look around the lounge. They call it the lounge where all the drivers and all the people hang out and, you know, get ready for the day. And sometimes in my arrogance, I look around and say, phew. But quickly, God's Spirit says, Daniel, don't do that. Every Thursday night, me and a group of people go to an establishment where all kinds of people are at. And we're in this little huddle praying and reading scripture and talking about Jesus. And nobody else in the room is doing that. And there are times when, in my arrogance, I want to look around that room and just for a second feel superior. And nothing could be further from the truth. You know, I'm convinced that if Jesus came back in physical form, he'd be at the double nickel with me every Thursday. And he'd be a lot better at me at breaking walls of separation and engaging with people more than we do. We had something exciting happen a couple of weeks ago. We were all sitting there, and we were talking about Jesus. And I forget exactly what we're talking about. It was something about Jesus. And the guy said, I want to buy you guys all a shot tonight. And I was like, oh, no. I don't know what I'm going to do, because I always get a big old pitcher of iced tea, and I get the pitcher so that I don't run the waitress insane, because I drink, like, sweet tea. And I'm sitting there, and I think, well, this is peculiar. What would Jesus do? I want to buy you guys a drink. You're here every week, and you guys are always having fun and laughing and talking. I want to get you a drink. What would you do? I ain't going to tell you what I did, because what happens at Alpha stays at Alpha. But remember, this passage says, don't judge me. I did not sin, Thelma, I promise. But the tea tasted better. God said, don't judge, because when you judge, something's going to happen. Let me keep going. And we know that God in his justice will punish anyone who does such things. The things he's talking about are condemning people, pointing the finger. He's not even talking about the people who do these sins. He's still talking about people who condemn other people. And I know this because he goes on and says this, since you judge others for doing these things, why do you think you can avoid God's judgment when you do the very same thing? Now, read that verse. I'm reminding myself, and I remind myself often this week, that, you know, we do have a judge, and his name is God. And God says there, he is just, and he knows the heart of people. And let me tell you something. God is a great judge. God, in his wisdom, God in his perspective, God in his ability to see my heart, and even when my body and my actions don't follow what I want to do, God is an expert at looking at people and saying, you need to stop that. You need to clean that up. That doesn't need to be in your life because you're my child anymore. He is much better at that than I am. And this passage says, in his justice, he will punish those who do such things, who are judging. Since you judge others, you take that place from God, God's judgment's going to come against us. And then he says this, and verse 4 is my favorite verse so far in Romans. We've been in Romans for 3 weeks, and so far, this is my favorite verse. As a matter of fact, in my Bible, I've highlighted it because I'm going to go back. I don't know if I'd missed it before, but it just is very special, and it really hits me now. It says this, verse 4. Don't you see how wonderfully kind and tolerant and patient God is with you? Does this mean nothing to you? Can't you see that his kindness is intended to turn you from your sin? And let me take this a little bit further. God's kindness to the world is to help the world and those who do not know him yet. His kindness to us, both inside the walls of this place and outside the walls of this place, is intended to drive us towards him because of his kindness. I have never heard the song we sang this morning about kindness. As a matter of fact, last week at teaching team, when Ken said, have you ever heard this song? And he hummed, I was like, nope. And he goes, well, it's going to be a good song. It's about kindness. I said, oh, it sounds like something out of Mary Poppins. I'm like, okay, let's go with it. I watched Jordy trying to sing it this morning. He had never heard it. He was like, this is new. But that song was perfect. Because one of the attributes of God that I sometimes forget is how outrageously kind he is. He looks at me, and he is kind. If I got what I deserved on a regular basis, I would be in deep, deep trouble. If he withdrew his kindness and his tolerance and his patience for me, he would take me out. This verse says God is good. And guys, that's sweet because he has a right to not be good. He says, Daniel, I don't want you to do that. I go and do that. What does he do? He loves me and says, dude, chill. Quit doing that. He allows consequences to come into my life to warn me, hey, this isn't going to work the way you're doing this. But I'll be stubborn and I'll say, well, I can get away. God is kind and tolerant and patient with me. And he does that so that I will come to the realization one day that doing it God's way is better than doing it my way. Doing it his way has benefits because I am living in his will for my life. And for Daniel, I'm not as smart as many of you. It is a lifelong pursuit. And I have not got it yet. I'm still learning new areas that I have to try to conform to him. To live and to lean into that kindness every day. Well, there's three applications, three takeaways I took from this, and the teaching team kind of helped me with this. The first was, there were some issues in the Church of Rome. The first one was God's people, the Christians in Rome, were using God's grace as an excuse to sin. This was a big deal for Romans, and Paul is going to talk a little bit more about this at the Church in Rome. Because of God's kindness, because of God's grace, that does not give us an excuse to do anything we want to do. That's just not the way it works. Max Lucado once wrote a book. He said, God loves you just the way you are. And he does. But he loves you so much, he refuses to leave you the way he finds you. He wants you to grow and to change. And one of the things I'm afraid I have done in my life, one of the things I'm afraid that I can default to, is that I say I can do anything I want because God's grace and his kindness is there and he's going to forgive me. Guys, don't make that mistake. God's people were using God's grace as an excuse. Second one, God's people were experiencing grace, abundant, wonderful grace, but they were not sharing it. They were getting grace, but on a regular basis, the church at Rome was looking outside and saying, oh, that person's wicked. That person worships idols. This person does this. This person does that. And pointing their fingers at people saying what they did instead of doing what Jesus was doing on a regular basis, extending that grace to others. There's a famous body of water on our planet. It's called the Dead Sea. And I've never been to the Holy Land. I've never been to Palestine and seen that area. But maybe one day Jim will say you need to go there so you can be a better teacher. And he'll pay for me to go and spend a couple weeks and have a break. He's not biting. But I have heard that the Jordan River is a strong river. It is filled with fresh water. And it brings life to a strip in Israel that's about 30 miles wide. I mean, where the Jordan River flows through Palestine, next to Jordan, through that area, there is lush, green, beautiful area. It's just a beautiful, beautiful, strong, flowing river. But it dumps itself, this fresh, perfect water, into a place where there's no outlet for it. There's no river flowing south of it. There's no streams flowing out of it. All this fresh, great water just dumps into this big hole in Palestine called the Dead Sea because when it gets there, it has nowhere to go. And it's called the Dead Sea because nothing lives there. There's no fish. There's no dolphins. There's no whales. Even birds don't visit this dead sea because there ain't no little animals to eat. It is dead because this beautiful fresh water dumps into it and it goes nowhere. Christians in this room, let me give you a stark warning. You and I have received much grace. The very fact that we're sitting here this morning, that we've not been consumed, tells me that we are recipients of grace. When you don't share that grace with others, you are disobeying God. That grace comes to us so that we can look at people who've been where we are, who have struggled with what we've struggled, and we can say, listen, there is a God who will forgive. This week, I had an opportunity to meet with a young person who has been in trouble with the law. And we were just talking a little bit and everything, and she's doing so great. And she said, things are getting better. Things are getting better. And I said to this person, you know what? I've been just where you are. I gave my parents seizures of anger. I gave my parents mountains of disappointment. They looked at my sister, who was valedictorian of her class, who was nice and sweet and wonderful and perfect. They looked at my brother, who was different, but for a time, he did graduate valedictorian of his class too, and then he went off the deep end. But, you know, and then I came along, and I would just sit there and want to watch, you know, Dallas every night and want to, you know, play with Tinker Toys. I didn't give a rip about studying. I never did my homework. Now, for the first two or three days of school every year, I would try, and then I'd say, well, this ain't going to work. I don't understand any of this. So I would just bluff my way through school for the next year. I have been there. I didn't go to prison, but I went to private Christian school. And the handcuffs were put on every day. And I can just remember the teachers being like, what is wrong with you? We knew your brother and your sister. Were you adopted? Did your mother meet someone? What's wrong with you? I'm like, it's just the way I am. I know what it's like to have struggled as a teenager. I know what it's like to have gotten in trouble. I know what it's like to have disappointed God and to have disappointed my friends. It would have come up so short so many times. So how could I ever withdraw saying from somebody, I understand your struggle? How could I ever point at somebody and say, well, you do that? What's wrong with you? Stop it. No, I can say, I did that, but I got over it and am getting over it. And God can intersect your life and change everything for you. He can change your future. He can change your attitude. He can change your perspective. He can change your direction. And you will fall again. You will fail again. You'll get in trouble again. But he will pick you up and help you to keep going. My God, why wouldn't I tell everybody that? And who in your life have you ever met that didn't need to hear the exact same thing? There are people in your life right now that God has probably put there that are struggling with the same stuff you struggle with today and the stuff you struggled with yesterday. You can serve them by allowing that grace that God has dumped on you just to flow out of you. So when you see somebody doing something and you're like, oh, that's terrible, just say, hey, I remember when I used to do that, and let me tell you what God did for me. And let me tell you my experience and where I've been. And let me walk alongside of you. There's one other thing that's a takeaway from this passage, and this one's good. God's people had a blind spot when it came to their own sin. Now, I need to tell you something very honestly. last night, I struggled all week with this point. As a matter of fact, last night, I do this weird thing. I print out my PowerPoint presentation, and I write little notes, and I put a big question mark right here on this one, on the blind spot. Because last night, I'm sitting at home, and I couldn't think of any blind spots I had in my life. I put a big question mark there. This morning, I'm talking to Ken DePeel, and he goes, well, are you ready? And I said, Ken, usually I have a great story for a point, and this is going to be the story, but I can't find a point for this one story. I just don't have a point. God's people had a blind spot when it came to their own sin, and I can think of one for me. And then I thought to myself, dummy, that's the blind spot. You big 8-foot moron, your blind spot is the fact that your whole life is, my whole life is one big blind spot. I want to give you a little heads up on Daniel. I get frustrated sometimes at people. I know that's hard to believe, but I get frustrated. Richard, put your hand down. I have discovered, this is so true of me, the more irritated I get with someone, the more like me they are. Do you hear that? I get irritated when I see people acting like me. So I see someone who's a little selfish. They'll get the last donut off the table. That's me. I have to have my radio on my station. That's me. I sit at home and I drive someone in the room crazy. I won't mention their name, but I have what I call my first TV show, my second TV show, and my third TV show. And I'm watching like 2 or 3 shows at a time, and I time it perfect. I've become a commercial aficionado. I know when the commercials are going to be off, and if I miss it, and then if the shows get off sync and there's commercial on 3, I go into spasms. Why is that? Because I'm weird and impatient, and I have a short attention span. And when I see that in people, it makes me angry at them. I am a blind spot. And if you're in this room and I've ever gotten especially frustrated with you, you're probably so much, I'm trying not to look at anybody, but it's probably because you behave just like me. And I just don't want to see myself. Nobody likes looking in a mirror unless there's something wrong with you. The people in Rome had a blind spot to their issues. They were so good at finding the issues with other people. They were so good at being critical. They were so good at passing judgment. And God said, guys, open your eyes. The very fact that you're being so judgmental is an issue. Well, let me keep going. So I should have taken the big question mark off and just said, oh, it's me. Let me keep going. Verse 5. But because you are stubborn and refuse to turn from your sin, you're storing up terrible punishment for yourself. For a day of anger is coming when God's righteous judgment will be revealed. He will judge everyone according to what they're done. I have to give a little word of explanation here. Paul is very specific when he says that these people are stubborn and refusing to turn from their sin, and because of that, God's anger will come. There is a huge difference between someone who has stubbornly and willfully decided to continue to disobey God and make themselves the center of their life, as opposed to someone who is trying to live for God and is trying to do things God's way, and they fail, and they stumble, and they fall right in the mud, but they get up and ask for forgiveness. The difference is striking to me. This continues to say that God is the judge, God knows us, and he says to them, there is a time coming when God is going to look and evaluate, and he is going to separate those who have followed him and those who haven't. If I had read this verse 20 years ago, I'd have said something like this: God is just waiting with a lightning bolt to zap me at any second. But that's not what this passage says. It says those who stubbornly continue to live in a thing that is not acceptable to God. For those who continue to say, I will do it my way, I will have my own judgments, I will do everything my way. It is the ultimate form of selfishness. And Paul reasserts this when he says this in verse 7. He will give eternal life to those who keep doing good, seeking after the glory and honor and immortality that God offers. But he will pour out anger and wrath on those who live for who? Themselves. You know, last week I told you that one thing that all of these issues had in common were that they were self-centered and self-motivated. And Paul lays it out here very succinctly. He says, people who continue to live for themselves and not looking to make God Lord of their lives are going to suffer. They refuse to obey the truth and instead live lives of wickedness. He goes on to say, there will be trouble and calamity for everyone who keeps on doing what is evil, for the Jew first and also for the Gentile. But there will be glory and honor and peace from God on all who do good, for the Jew first and then the Gentile. Now, I need to talk for just a second about this thing, because this is about the third time that the Apostle Paul has talked about a distinction between Jews and Gentiles. And I want to talk about that for just a minute. In the time that Paul lived, in the time of the nation of Israel, they considered that there were two groups of people inhabiting this planet. There were the people who were Jews. They were of Hebrew descent. They were people of the lineage and line of Abraham. Everyone who was born of Abraham's race was a Hebrew, was a Jew, and they had a special place in God's economy. Now, that special place was not because they were special or because they were somehow or another superior. They were special because God chose to use them to share hope with the world. That's the only reason God chose them. Abraham, your descendants will bring hope to the world by sharing the story of God's love and by eventually one day having a person named Jesus Christ take on flesh, God himself, come from the line of David, come from the line of Abraham, come in the line of Judaism, and he would be the source of hope for the world. There were Jews and everyone else. If you were not a Jew, you were a Gentile. I think most of us in this room are Gentiles. I know for a fact that I'm the tallest Gentile in the room. I am a Gentile. And Paul says, listen, it makes no difference if you are a Jew or a Gentile. You are going to be celebrated for doing good, or you are going to be corrected for doing bad, whether you're Jew or Gentile. Whether you get the correction first or last, Jew or Gentile, you're going to be corrected. Whether you were celebrated, and God says, well done, he might say it to the Jew first, but he's going to say it to the Gentile just the same. And this tells me this. In God's economy, we have to be very careful that we do not rely on our position or what we think is our air of specialness. How this works today, I have seen this happen in churches, but not as much here, and I appreciate that. But I have almost seen Christians build these holy walls around themselves to try to keep them from ever coming in contact with those outside of the church. Now remember, God said through Paul, Jew and Gentile alike, those in the club and those aren't, are going to be celebrated, they're going to be rewarded, and they're going to be punished equally for what they've done. The same thing is true in 2016 of Christians and non-Christians. God is going to judge, but you and I cannot look at those outside the walls of this church as if though they are less than. This is the takeaway. The only foundation that we can stand on is God's grace. Not that we're Wesleyans. Not that we're Catholics. Not that we're Methodists. Not that we're Southern Baptists. Ooh, doggy, when I was growing up, I cannot tell you the number of times I heard Southern Baptists are the best. We're the most close to God. We read the Bible the best, and we're the ones that we're going to be in heaven first. Like, we're going to have a better mansion in heaven than you Wesleyans and all you other, you know, losers. That's nuts. Being in a church is not a foundation you can stand on. Being good is not a foundation you can stand on. The Jews could not stand on the foundation of being in the line of Abraham. And the Gentiles could not say, we are less than because we are not part of the line of Abraham. The only foundation we can stand on, whether we are Jew, Gentile, a member of the church, not a member of the church, the only foundation we can stand on is God's grace, period. It is the only hope we have. White, black, Asian, Hispanic, Democrat, Republican, rich, poor. at this church every week or at the Double Nickel Bar every day. The only hope we have, the only thing we can stand on, is God's grace. And it comes through the person of Jesus Christ. I think it was a big deal to Paul that the people in Rome were somehow or another missing this. He said, guys, realize this. You are no better. You are no more secure. The only hope we have is him. So don't become arrogant. Don't become prideful. Don't become judgmental. That is the only hope I have. A couple more things he says, and he reiterates this a couple more times. He says, for God does not show favoritism. I love that. God does not show favoritism between Jews and Gentiles. When Gentiles sin, they'll be destroyed, even though they never had God's law written on their heart. And the Jews who do have God's law will be judged by the law when they fail to obey it. For merely listening to the law doesn't make us right with God. It is obeying the law that makes us right in his sight. Even Gentiles, even us, who do not have God's law written. And he's talking about at that point, it had not gone all over the world. We have these laws today. But he says, even Gentiles who do not have God's written law show that they know his law when they instinctively obey it, even without having heard it. They demonstrate that God's law is written in their hearts, for their own conscience and thoughts either accuse them or tell them that they are doing right. And this is the message I proclaim, that the day is coming when God, through Jesus Christ, will judge everyone's secret life. When I read that, there's a couple of things it tells me. There's a couple of applications that come from this. The first is this: no one is without excuse. No one. This passage says to me that God, and this is kind of repeating something that Paul said at the beginning of the book of Romans, this is saying that God has revealed himself to people. Friday night, when we were at the trunk or treat thing, it was amazing how perfect the weather was. Now, for me, it was even more perfect because the year before, it rained like there was a tornado. It was like a hurricane. There was a monsoon that happened about an hour before my trunk or treat, and it lasted till about an hour after, and then it cleared up. Well, this is brilliant. I mean, it rained and rained and rained a year ago. So this year, it was perfect. 70 degrees, not a cloud in the sky. It was just perfect weather. And I said, God, what a great job you did on the weather today. Where were you last year? But I said, what a great job you did on the weather today. Saturday morning, I got to have breakfast with a friend, and the sun was coming up in the east, and it was coming up, and there was this, I don't know if it was some kind of a cloud formation or haze, but it was just, you could see the sunlight shining through a cloud, and I thought to myself, God, you were just knocking it out of the park this weekend. What a great job you're doing. And then this morning, that's the way it is. God has shown himself. I see him in the beauty that's around me. I see him in sunrises and sunsets, but I also see him in this book. And I see the way he's treated me. And I see the way he treats others. And I've come to this conclusion. No one in this room is without an excuse. God is there. But there's also something very good. No one in this room is without hope. Those two things go so well together. Nobody hears that excuse. We know. But there's nobody in this room who's without hope. So, the Apostle Paul writes to the church at Rome, the church, and he writes this day. What would he say to us? I think this is what he would say. He would say, like the Wesleyan Church, you guys do a great job at reaching people. You do a good job of lowering barriers to people. You do a great job of making even the most distant person feel comfortable. I think he would say, keep doing that. I think he would say, keep up the good work at allowing people to come here who have broken lives and broken dreams and broken marriages and broken careers. Keep welcoming them and re-up the welcome.
And then I think he would say to every one of us in our personal lives, in our interaction with people every day, are we expressing that hope on a regular basis? I want to give you an assignment this week. This is going to be a little weird, so, you know, it's like if you don't want to do it anyway. I want you to think about the people in your life and think if there's someone who is broken, someone who is hurt, someone who is far from God, but someone that you can relate with and say, I was there at one point, and share that with them. You know, I've had a lot of people come to me in my life and say things that I was doing wrong, saying attitudes I had that were wrong, and they were right, but I didn't want to hear it. But let me tell you, the most winsome conversations I've ever had with people who were correcting me, they would come to me and say, Daniel, I know what you're going through because I used to be young and stupid. I know what you're going through because I used to be immature and a buffoon. Daniel, I know what you're going through because I used to be there. And God gave me a little taste of victory in that. Let me share with you what God did for me, and I think he can do it for you, and let's do it together. I would never turn down someone who said something like that to me. I would say something like, tell me more. Tell me how that happened, how that worked out. Tell me what your life was like and what God did for you. That's how I would be. Think about somebody in your life this week who desperately needs hope, who desperately needs to hear that there is a God who loves them, there is a God who cares for them. And at least so far in the book of Romans, his most harsh words were to the church who wasn't sharing that. I want us to share that with people we meet this week. Sound like a plan to you? We're not leaving until everybody in the room says yes. Sound like a plan to you?
Yes.
Let me ask God to help us.
Thanks again for listening to Olathe Wesleyan Church's online teaching. To learn more, visit us at olathewesleyan.org or visit us on a Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m.